The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban for the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. And today's veteran is Major Bob Jordan, USMC retired. Bob was present at the Beirut bombing and lived through it. Bob, welcome to Salute a Veteran Every Day.
Well, thank you.
Bob, you had a great career, and probably the Beirut bombing was some of the best and some of the worst in mankind for you to see. Any inkling leading up to the attack?
Yeah, the night before was interesting. We were getting a lot of flak down in the south of the where we were at the airport, and I went up on top of the building to look at what was happening because I knew I would be getting queries. And about the time that I was getting ready to leave, a hand went onto my shoulder, and I looked up, and it was the sergeant major. And he said, Major, I don't think you want to be showing the troops a bad model, but we are in the highest security. And I didn't have my cap on because I wanted to hear everything, and I smiled and I said, "It's okay, Sergeant Major. I'm just." So I went downstairs and checked out. Went to my bunk, which was up in the. It had been a firehouse garage. But it was the headquarters for 24 Mile. I went in and showered and I took my uniform and put it on the mosquito net on over the canvas cot. And then put the towels on top of that and got into bed and went to sleep. But the next day I was invited to go to the French Foreign Legion paratroopers anniversary, and so I decided I was going to be sleeping in. Things went pretty good until I woke up at 6 o'clock, and the sun was poking through the bullet holes in the doors, and the birds were singing. And I thought, well, I'll just take and get a couple more winks. And I went to sleep, and all of a sudden I heard the loudest, flattest, weirdest explosion that I had ever heard. And I'd been in Vietnam and several other places where I'd been under artillery attacks and so forth, and this just shook everything.
You knew it was something big.
We had a steel door right by my bunk, and it was welded shut, and the impact flattened the door right between me and one of the chaplains, and I got out and looked around, and there was glass everywhere, and I had been saved by the cushioning. My cot was covered with the broken glass that had been imploded, and so I trotted down to the operations office, and I saw a corporal who was sweeping up debris, and there was no roof over the operations center. And I asked what was going on, and he said, Major, he says, the BLT is gone. And I couldn't quite believe that. And, you know, as a PAO, you take the first and second and third reports with a grain of salt until you get some facts. And the public affairs office was in a little room just across the hallway from that. It had survived the blast, and I had two phones. I had a black phone for local calls, and I had a gray phone that I could call directly back to the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up the black phone, and it was dead, so I know it was something very serious. And then I picked up the gray phone, and it, too, was dead. And then I looked over at the tent where my public affairs team slept,
mm-hmm.
and they were kind of just coming out of the beds. One of them had been blown out of the bunk and had got wounds from the flying glass. So I went back and I put my combat gear on and then went out and started down the hill to where the VLT was. And I met my press chief, Staff Sergeant Gatto. I asked him, what's going on? And his eyes were almost big as saucers. And he said, sir, the VLT is gone.
Mm.
And I told him, well, get back out the hill. At that time, I didn't know it, but he had been blown out. He was going down to process some film and decided to go back and do some writing. And the blast had blown him completely out of his chair and all the way across into some wooden framework. And so I started out then on down the hill, and my assistant, young captain, was coming up the hill with a Marine on his back who was bleeding profusely.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, what's going on? And he says, well, sir, the BLT has been flattened.
And what's BLT?
The Battalion Landing Team building.
Building. Mm-hmm.
It's the 1st Battalion, 8th Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And all the medical people had been down in the basement, and the majority of them had been either severely wounded or killed in the blast.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a four-story building, and all of that rubble had pressed into and was covered them up. And he was taking them to the another building where they did have a corpsman that at least would be able to help.
Mm-hmm.
So then I looked over, and I saw the tree line. All the leaves had been blown off. And I saw a top from a machine ammo can that was embedded into a palm tree about 40 feet up in the air.
Mm.
And then I walked on over to where the stairway was that went down into towards where the building was, and it was leveled with about 4 feet of debris, pulverized concrete and debris. And by that time, my gunnery sergeant, Sergeant Lang, came up next to me, and we both picked our way through the rubble. And as I got down to the bottom, I saw two Marines in running gear, and they were sitting in a fetal position and in shock. And they were covered with this powdered cement, pulverized cement.
Mm-hmm.
And as I got nearer, I saw that one was white and the other was black, but you couldn't tell very much from that. And I looked to the left, and there was about 12 Marines that were standing there in shock. I didn't realize it at the time, but they had been in the upper levels of the building, and the power of the blast had picked them up and floated them down to the ground, which saved their lives.
Oh, gosh.
And they were still, you know, in shock. So I told the gunny, I saw a little Jeep there, and asked him to get it started. And I reached down to the Black Marine and put my arms around him with his face towards me. And as I picked him up, I could feel the damp blood coming out of a big hole in his back. And I put my hands over that to stop the flow, got him into the Jeep, and Sergeant Lang got the other man and put him in the Jeep. But then we realized there's no way we could get out because of too much debris.
Mm-hmm.
So I gathered the Marines up. I found one who was a truck driver, another who was a bulldozer driver, and that we got in, and the rest of them picked through the debris, and they picked up the dead and the body parts and so forth and put them up in the truck. And we moved along slowly and carefully. And about that time, Colonel Tim Garrity, who was the 24 commander, put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Major, what are you doing?" And I told him, I said, "I'm trying to help my comrades here." And he said, "I understand." He said, "But I've got other people that can do that, and you need to go handle the media."
Mm-hmm.
And it was emotionally, it was the most difficult thing that I ever remember doing.
Yes. And knowing you, it's hard for you to turn and leave those troops and go talk to the media.
I started up the hill, and I'm thinking, what am I going to say?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. I thought maybe the Russians, I knew that there was some classified information that the Russians were supplying the long-term missiles. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe they had hit us with one of the missiles.
Mm-hmm.
But I had read a book before I had gone over by a British public affairs officer who said that he had worked when Lord Mountbatten had been killed by the Irish radicals in his yacht with his son and his son's friend blowed up. He said, "The only way you can turn this around is to show the inhumanity of those that have
perpetrated,
done this."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you need to rub the survivors, the observers, and the public. You need to rub their face into the inhumane situation. But at the same time, you need to show the courage and the will of the targeted people as they pick through and recover and so forth.
Well, after all, you were there on a peacekeeping mission, right?
Exactly. And you cannot have peace where there is no peace.
Mm-hmm.
And there's 21 different organizations that were trying to gather enough power so that they could be the top dogs in Lebanon. They were fighting each other and so forth.
When you say people, you mean different factions?
21 different factions,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as I approached the media that was up by the tent, some of them started saying, "Oh my God, he's bleeding." And I looked down and I had blood from my elbows all the way down to my hands from the young man that I had picked up and put in the Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
And I just shrugged and said, "No, it's not my blood."
Mm-hmm.
I decided right there that I would quickly organize my team and we would circle where the explosion was without getting into the recovery and rescue operation.
Mm-hmm.
So I made 5 different teams, and they would slowly take the media around and stop for photography and so forth,
mm-hmm.
Which irritated some of the Marines because they
didn't want to be seen that way.
They didn't want, yeah.
Yeah.
And so we did that into the evening, and then I went up where the flag stand was, I thought it was out of view, and I just had to cut loose and started sobbing.
Mm.
And
how many died?
241, but mm-hmm. we didn't know that
at the time.
At that
sure.
time.
Yeah.
And one of the photographers, Doherty, came over and put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Major, what are you doing?" And I said, "I don't know." I said, I just don't know what to do. And he said, "Well," he says, "I've got everything that I need, but I can't leave until everybody else leaves. Why don't you just tell us to get the hell out of here?"
Mm-hmm.
And I laughed and said, "Get the hell out of here." And,
where did you go?
Left.
Where could you go?
Well,
the
embassy was downtown.
Uh-huh.
And there was a hotel that they all stayed in and so forth.
Yeah.
And then my troops and I went down to the place, and we started picking up body parts and bodies and bringing them out and so mm-hmm. forth. That was a 5-day operation.
Bob, I want to save time to tell our audience about the wonderful memorial that's down at Camp Lejeune. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. When we got home, we were pretty much scattered around.
Mm-hmm.
But the families of the men who had died had organized themselves, and they wanted to get something to remember their loved ones for. At the same time, the Marines wanted to be able to get together and share what each other has gone through.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, those two desires didn't mesh very well.
Sure.
And then one of the law officer called me and asked me if I would mind being the founding president of the Beirut Veterans of America.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, "Look, I'm not one of these guys that, comes in and drinks all the time and marches up and down and so forth and everything." And he said, "Our mission is just one thing." And I said, "What's that?" "That the first duty is to remember."
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And he had heard Jim Webb in a speech say that, and we adapted that as our motto. And so I finally decided to do that. And then as we were organizing, they wanted to have the organization for the 10th anniversary. As that was going on, the families came to me and asked how they could get a memorial that would be more than what I call a backyard barbecue memorial. And I told them, you're going to have to work within the organizations, show what has happened and gather enough money to where you can build something that is worthwhile. And so they went to work, and they started to have spaghetti dinners and all kinds of different things, and going to the Marine Corps League and so forth. The Marine Corps League had put a little brick memorial over by the airfield. There was another little brick memorial behind Building 1 at Camp Lejeune. Meanwhile, there was a committee in the city that had begun designing what they wanted, and the families let them know that they didn't want something that was just a small thing. They wanted to have names on the placards and so forth and everything. And so we built this big memorial that had 270-some names on it, both names from those that were killed in Beirut and those who died at the in Grenada. And
Grenada, so did you say? Or did you mean Beirut?
Grenada.
Oh, okay.
Grenada.
Was Grenada, that was around that time, wasn't it?
The explosion was, I think, one day before they landed in Grenada.
Oh, my gosh.
And I did a piece on the 30th anniversary about Evie's husband. Evie is a Cuban girl, came to the United States when she was 10 years old, and she died of cancer in her 40s. But Manny and Evie...
We're a slave to the clock here.
Okay.
I'd like you to get on with the story of you and Evie.
the memorial... was built, and we had our first morning candle ceremony. We had about 100 people there at that time.
This is a
daybreak. It was at 6 o'clock. We started. We said all the names, and ironically, the last name was 22 minutes after we started, which is when the bomb would have went off. And then there's a major public ceremony, which had about 300 people, citizens and families and so forth and so forth. And then but over the years, it has grown to where now we get about 1,000 people at the candle ceremony, and we get about 4,000 at the morning ceremony. And every fifth year, we have a special ceremony where we get all the Marines together, and we have a meal and so forth. But the BVA, the Beirut Veterans of America, have evolved over the time. My first wife and I carried it for a long time, and I met Evie during the 15th anniversary, and she became my connect. She married, and we took it up to the 20th anniversary, and then we turned it over to the troops, and they've done a very great job of memorializing the sacrifice of those that died and those that were wounded and those that had served.
Now, before you lost your wife, did you have the opportunity to meet Evie then, so that
No, I.
Or was that some years later?
She had been. She passed away about 4 years before I met Evie.
I see.
And I met Evie at the 15th anniversary. And Evie and I, my wife died Thanksgiving weekend, and her husband was killed in December, December the 4th. So each year we light a candle for the loved ones that have already gone ahead of us. And really appreciate the love and the service that our spouses have done when they were here alive. And we've just celebrated our 20th anniversary last July.
Congratulations. Well, I want to tell the listeners that what came out of this horrible bombing is Bob and Evie both ended up finding each other later at one of the commemoration ceremonies, right?
Right.
And it's just a beautiful story. They both talk openly about their former spouses, and I just think it's a wonderful relationship, Bob, and one that you can be proud of, certainly.
Well, the one thing that I'm proud of, too, is that we are, the principals who were involved in all of this are getting older.
Yes.
Most of them were in their 19 and 20. They're up in their 50s now. And some of the old guys like myself that were in Vietnam, I just turned 84. And Evie is 20 years younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
The families now are passing away, but their children are dedicated. They want to carry it forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know now that it is important enough to our families that they will continue to remind the public about Beirut and how important it is and what the sacrifice was that became. And we really were the first echelon of the Third World War. As simple as I can put it.
Well,
Third World War is still going on, and it's going to go on for decades.
Yeah.
As
you're right. Bob, thanks so much for being on Salute a Veteran Every Day. You're a true American hero, and I'm honored to have you on today. And please give Evie my love and a big hug.
Thank you very much. God bless.
Well, we've used up our time for Salute a Veteran Every Day. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Frank Urban for the North Carolina Reading Service. See you next time.